Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right. We need some help. Welcome to MPH Radio, Missing Pages of History. We welcome you on the 8th day of May 2021. And our theme today is A View on Law, Justice, and Legal Rights within the African-Black Community. With us, we have a special guest, a professor of law, Irvin Shorter, will share his expertise and his experiences when this concept of law, justice, and legal rights within our community. He will be our special guest, but before we get to our special guest, like always, as we speak to the underserved communities, what we'd like to do is give you the order of the lineup for today's program, which will include a discussion on what is freedom, giving you something to think about, MPH Black Mini Facts, followed by a message to the community from Alice Joyner, and then we'll bring on our special guests as we again to address the issue of a view on law, justice, and legal rights within the African/Black community. That's our order for today's program. So right now what we're going to do is we want to give you something to think about as it relates to freedom. A concept on freedom is there can be no freedom without power. A concept on freedom is there can be no freedom without power. What do y'all think about that concept? We would like for you to think about it at the end of the day. When we open up your lines, we'd like to have your views and your discussion on this concept, dealing with this definition. There can be no freedom without power. So that's our little concept today on freedom, giving you something to think about. And what we're going to do now, make a quick transition to Susie. She's going to share with you some black mini facts as relates to some of the historical events of our people movement and realities. So right now, we're going to turn the mic over to Susie, and she will share with you for MPH Black Mini Facts. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. Today's Black Mini Facts is coming from the PRSP calendar of 2021, and it starts with May the 2nd, and it'll go May the 4th, 2021. First, we have Nanny Helen Burroughs, African educator, born in 1876. Then we have Asada Shakur, attacked by state troopers on New Jersey Turnpike, which happened in 1973. And we also have on the second Queen Mother Moore, founder of the Republic of New Africa, died in 1997. Many facts for May the 3rd, when Frederick O'Neill became president of the Revolutionary Trade Union for Actors for the American Negro Theater in 1964. And last, at this moment, the many facts for May the 4th is racist South African troops massacred and wounded hundreds of Namibians in refugee camps in Angola in 1978. I've just given you three mini facts from the PRSP calendar of May 2021.
We're going to take a station break right now with music with a message. When we come back, Susan will continue her Black Mini Facts for the week. This is MPH Radio. We'll be right back.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. Steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force and truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. To get blurry, some strange reason it has. had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. As we took our station break with music with a message, we'll come back with Susie and she will continue sharing her MPH Black Mini Facts for this week. We will turn the mic man over to Susie. You may continue.
Hi, this is a continuation of the Black Mini Facts from May 5th through the 8th of 2021. The first one on the 5th. Adam Clayton Powell, senior activist, was born in 1865. Then, also another mini fact was the valiant Ethiopian guerrillas routed fascist Italian troops from Addis Ababa in 1941. On May the 6th, 400 students seized administration building in Cheney State College in 1967. A mini fact on the 7th of May was the French imperialism met its grave in Dang Binh Phu, North Vietnam in 1954. And last and finally, on the 8th of May, the Afrikaans became the official language of South Africa in 1925. African workers in the U.S. founded the Black Union Railway Orders in 1926. That's for the week of May the 2nd through the 8th, Mini Black History Facts from the PRSP calendar of 2021.
We'd like to thank you, Susan, for your Black Mini Facts. And ma'am, we would ask everybody to get out some paper and a pen or pencil. And we're going to a history class. We got very honored to have a special guest, an icon, a civil rights icon, activist, leader, great legal mind, to come and share his thoughts and his experiences with us. He can help us fill in one of our many legal pages as relates to a view on law, justice, and legal rights within the African Black community. And we talk about the movements, the struggle of African people in this country as well as worldwide. We have with us a special, special individual that we would like to share with the rest of the world as relates to this theme tonight. And his name is Professor Urban Joyner. We'd like to welcome him to MPH Radio. Professor Urban Joyner, welcome to MPH Radio.
Thank you for having me on MPH Radio. It is an honor to be given this opportunity to talk to you and your audience.
Okay, Professor Joyner, one of the things we would like for you to do, because we don't want to toot your horn, we would like to give you the opportunity to share with us how you would like to be viewed and how you would like to be looked upon as relates to the work that you have done for our people, humanity. How would you introduce yourself? Tell our people a little something about who your professor, the law professor, Mr. Urban Joyner, the civil rights icon in the legal field. How would you describe yourself?
Well, thank you for that opportunity. I think I would describe myself more as a servant of the civil rights movement. And an ambassador in the efforts to elevate the political standing, political posture, political participation of African Americans in this search for democracy in the United States, and more particularly in North Carolina. I believe that those ideals that have been expressed and a part of the so-called democratic dream is one that is and can be beneficial to African Americans, and one of the things that we are called upon to do is to ensure that the government lives up to the promises that that they've made to us as a people. And those promises are real. They are easily forgotten and overlooked, and will continue to be forgotten and overlooked unless we rise up and that we voice our demand that this country pay to us what has been promised for our being a part of the growth and development of this democracy. It would not exist without us and the contribution that our foreparents made to this struggle, and we as a people are entitled to the returns on those investments. And I see my role as just one of many who are engaged in the effort to secure the benefits of the investments that we and our people have made to this country.
Okay, Professor Joyner, when we talk about the historical legacy of the struggle of African people in this country, now, you say we need to remind the U.S. government and the rest of the world as well the promises that were made to African people here. Let's just do that. Can you give us a reminder of what reminders of what promises did they make to the African people here in the United States? Just what were the promises?
Well, more particularly that we have a constitutional right to life, to liberty, to the pursuit of happiness, which is a pretty broad area, pretty broad brush that we are dealing with. But those concepts envisions the opportunity for us to fully develop ourselves as individuals, ourselves as family members, ourselves as members of a community that is going to be protected by the government in which we are a part of, and that government is going to secure the protections that we need individually as people to grow and develop and to make positive and progressive contributions to a strengthened government that we are a part of. So those are, in broad strokes, the promises that this country has made to us. It's one that really envelops all people, but in particular, it envelops African Americans because our people were brought here in shackles and made to develop the riches of this country, to turn it into what it is today. And it is to that history that there is an entitlement to the benefits of the democracy that we have, and our goal is to ensure that that we receive that and that we are able to preserve that for our children and grandchildren and those who follow us.
Professor Joyner, you are a professor. Are you still working at North Carolina Central University? I know for years you've been teaching constitutional law. And one of the things I want to ask you to extrapolate on is this concept of law. Because we know that in all societies, they make laws to govern that society. But also when one look at the philosophy of law itself, what comes with that is also a bias towards leaning toward a certain particular segment. Most people tell you that most laws are viewed from the perspective of protecting the rich and the powerful. And if that is the case, from your own legal mind, how do we create laws that will protect those who may not be rich and powerful?
Well, and I think that the point that you make is one that is certainly appropriate when we look at the some of the realities of life. But what we talk about, though, this notion or this concept of the rule of law, which is something that should guide every society, we're talking about a set of principles or ideals that ensure an orderly and just society. And theoretically, that encompasses where we are in this country, where we have a what you call constitutional republic. And as a part of this constitutional republic, there are laws which are made by the majority and the representatives of the people choose exactly what the particular and specific laws are that are enacted. But overriding all of those laws are the promises that are contained in the amendments to the United States Constitution, the development of the North Carolina Constitution, which speaks to this notion of individual rights. And of the laws that are enacted by people, they must be consistent with and authorized by the Constitution. And it is in the constitutional rights that we find the protections that that we should have from bias and prejudice and suppression and oppression that is developed within the law structure itself. Now, part of the law is determining who it is that makes the laws, number one, who it is that enforces the law, and who it is that interpret the laws. And to that extent, it is something that we need to be very conscious of in our determination of who those individuals are and our effort to ensure that those people who are in positions of making the laws, enforcing the laws, and interpreting the laws are people who understand the constitutional protections that are afforded to the least of these, to the people. And it is to the people that this country is designed to protect, notwithstanding the historic racism that was present in the formulation of the country. We are in a position now, as we move about from place to place, to demand that this notion of the rule of law apply to us in the same way that it does to anyone else. And that's why we regularly make resort to the courts, to help the courts to understand how those laws should be properly interpreted so that our rights and interests are protected. So to the extent that we don't participate in the process, then we surrender to those people who are the rich and the famous and the powerful, the benefits of this society, when those benefits should accrue to all of the people, and we will not get our piece of the pie or our people part of the field or the return on our 40 acres and a mule until we raise our voices to ensure that the rich and the powerful and those who are in positions of privilege are not the only ones who are sharing in the riches of the government that that we're in. And that is a part of our responsibility. As soon as we don't participate, and history bears this out, then those people who are adverse to representing our interests and protecting our rights are the ones who are in control. It is at the point that we assert ourselves and put our people in positions of power that we begin to see the benefits from just laws and just enforcement of the laws and just interpretation of the laws. But the notion is that if you don't ask, you don't receive. If you don't demand, you don't get. And if you're not willing to fight for those things that your rights under the law, then those things will be denied to you, and others will step in the breach and take from us those things that that we are entitled to receive.
You know, Professor, you raised some interesting issues in your recent presentation just now. One of the things I'd like to raise with you and I'd like to hear your feedback is on this argument of if we legitimize the U.S. Constitution and participate within the realms of the rules of the game that has been established by the so-called forefathers, who represent a certain mindset of the powerful and elite, a certain mindset for control, domination, a certain mindset of pro-slavery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If we participate in this process and legitimize it, then we shun complaints in terms of whatever outcome comes from this, because we have given them approval to legitimize what decisions come from, what they have structured. A system that is structured towards to enhance, you know, those things that they want to maintain and keep. For example, I was listening to a program the other day, and there was an argument or school of thought that when you're talking about constitutional law, it's not so much of what has been written explicitly, but also it's a question of what has been implied. What was the founding fathers' intent and mindset when they were making the law that should carry more weight than what was actually expressed? Your response to that way of looking at laws and the Constitution?
Well, you know, I don't disagree with what you said. I think though that we have to look at the history and put our position in context. And there is no doubt that the founders, I call them the floundering fathers, that the founders of this country did not intend. It was never in their imagination that people of African descent would be citizens in this country. And in fact, there was every effort made to ensure that that did not occur. The Dred Scott case made very clear the intention of the founders who put together this republic. Africans and the descendants of Africans were not to be a part of the governmental structure. There were creases in that plan, however, because there were instances where even in spite of that, people of African descent were a part of the government, functioning parts of the government. And in fact, here in North Carolina, free Africans, and there was a large percentage of Africans in North Carolina who were free and who were not enslaved during that period of enslavement that we know of. And in fact, in North Carolina, Africans, free Africans who owned property could vote up until 1835 here in this country. But the critical point for us, and I mean African Americans, comes after the Civil War, where Congress specifically empowered Africans and the descendants of Africans, whether they were freed before the Civil War or whether they were enslaved, that they would be a functioning part of American society. And that was with the enactment of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution. That served as a reproach or a slapback to what it was that the founders or the founders of this country had intended this country to be. And it then created a new beginning or a beginning part for the political empowerment of people who were not intended to be a part of this country, even though we were the ones that provided the labor, the ingenuity, the thinking that went into growing this country to what it was at that time. But with the enactment of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, then we obtained a legal basis, one for citizenship, and the other protections that this country offered to those persons who they deemed to be citizens. And it is from that right that was established that allowed for political empowerment of African Americans that we had the Reconstruction periods here in North Carolina, South Carolina, all over the South, where probably at that time, roughly 85% of the African American population in this country lived. And it is from those offerings of political empowerment, the ability to participate, that we now fight to gain the traction that we deserve, that is required, that are required for us to be able to become the more perfect nation that this country is supposed to be, and notwithstanding the fact that there are many people out there who don't agree with that. And there are many people who are pushing back. And they pushed back in 1865. They pushed back in 1860. They pushed back in 1898 with the Wilmington race riots and other race riots that have occurred throughout the country since that time. But it is when we begin that we come together and demand that our rights are protected and that the court system enforces the laws as it as those laws were intended to protect us, that we get the protection and the opportunity to grow and develop the communities in which we live. And I'm sure that you know of the many progressive efforts that have occurred in this country since Reconstruction. Notwithstanding the ups and the downs, the African-American community is in a far different place and enjoy a far different reality today than we enjoyed after the Reconstruction period ended. And that while we can celebrate those victories, that doesn't end it for us, because there is still a long way for us to go to fight against those repressive forces that seek to take us back to what this country intended or the founding fathers intended when they created this country in the first place. So there's a lot of deprivation, a lot of oppression, a lot of repression that have gone on in this country, but it will not go back to that level unless we stop fighting to ensure that those persons who want to take us back are not in positions of power, or that we are able to blunt those things that that they do. So notwithstanding the original intent, we've overcome that. We've overcome that. And our fight now is to cement our position in this governmental structure, in this societal structure that we have, that is going to ensure the opportunity for our offsprings to grow and develop in this country in the same manner that whites have been able to grow and develop.
Professor Joyner, you know, there's a lot of talk among this question of legitimizing this whole process that they call the discovery of the United States or America, in terms of the issue of we were raised to never claim something that is not ours and not to steal and take for something that doesn't belong to you. Given the fact that we look at the history of this country came as a result of taking and stealing from the indigenous people, if it were based upon that origin, do you ever think that justice and fairness can actually occur and dominate in a society that was not based upon its development in the area of being fair and equal? What is your response to that line of thinking and thought?
Yeah, well, clearly we live in a land where the indigenous people were overcome. They were their land was taken from them. There was an invasion of the land by people from outside of this continental divide, and as a part of that, there was the importation of our foreparents who were brought here against their will from Africa, the Caribbeans, and other parts of the diaspora to work to make this country a resort of sort for whites. That's the history that exists. There's nothing that we can do to change that history. What we need to do, and this is, in my estimation, is understand what that history was, how they did what they did, and then for those of us who have been oppressed and repressed, that have been the victims of this this structure and this government now, to band together to make this place what it is that we need it to be in order to grow and develop ourselves. Clearly, there are efforts at reparations for the indigenous people and indigenous nations that still exist within this country, but there's also a need for a struggle to obtain reparations for Africans and others who have been victimized by this same structure. And those are people of color, whether we're talking about Asians, whether we're talking about Hispanics, all have been in the category of being oppressed, repressed, and victimized by this society. So what we need to do is to join together to fight back against those who have taken, those who have profited from the taking, to ensure that there is a redistribution to those people who are entitled to the fruits of their labor. And clearly African Americans are entitled to the fruits of our labor, as are the indigenous people, as are Hispanics, as are those Asians who were a part of the victimization. And that is a part of this effort to bring about a more just society. We can't go back and undo what has occurred in the past, but we can work to make this society more just and to repair the breaches that has been caused by what has gone on in the past.
You are listening to Professor of Constitutional Law in Constitutional Law, our brother Irvin Joyner. He works at North Carolina Central University. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to take one more question from him. We're going to a station break, and when we come back, if you have any views or perspectives you'd like to share with them, we encourage you to call in at 818-337-0016. So, Professor, we'll ask you one more question before we take the station break with music or the message. And this is the question. If African people in this country are citizens, based on the 13th, 14th Amendment, et cetera, one will ask the question, why is it that every 20 years there must be a congressional law passed to give us the right to vote? Why we continue to have to do this every 20-some years?
Well, I'm thinking that you're referring to the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which was initially enacted for a 25-year period. And then subsequent to that, it was reenacted for another 25-year period. And that law is still in effect today and forms the basis of the many efforts that we're engaged in to ensure that African Americans' political rights are protected and that they are recognized by the states. This is a federal law that prevents the states from engaging in conduct that is designed to undermine the ability of African Americans and people of color to vote and to aggressively participate in the political franchise. And the congressional enactment, which is different, though, than the constitutional right that we're talking about under the 15th Amendment, is dependent upon the powers and length of time that Congress provided to it. As you know, Congress is made up mainly of whites. Even though there is a growing number of African Americans and people of color in Congress, the Voting Rights Act was designed to take away powers from the state, but under the Constitution, that takeaway of power by Congress cannot be indefinite. It can be renewed, and so it is the renewal of that taking away that is at the heart of many of the litigated efforts that are going on now to ensure that we continue to enjoy the right to vote, where there are people within our states that are determined to take away those rights or minimize those rights. And that is a struggle that we have been engaged in since 1868. And that has increased as we have entered into the 1980s, the 1990s, and even on up until today. And while we have been able to marshal participation from African Americans to increase the voting power and the number of people who look like us, who are representing us in the state legislature, in the congressional area, in local and county and city governments, unless we continue that fight, then we are going to put ourselves in a position that suppression and oppression of those rights will be able to will be obtained by those who don't want us to vote. So while we have that right, we have to fight to keep it, then we have to fight to maintain it, then we have to fight to exploit it and make sure that it works in our best interest. But the fact that we're having to do that incrementally is an issue that has to be resolved in Congress, and presently there are efforts afoot to ensure that that occurs. So that's a part of the constitutional and legislative structure that we are involved in this state, in this country, and we are moving to ensure that those rights continue to flow on our behalf.
And you're listening to MPH Radio. We're talking to Professor Joyner. He's a professor at the University of North Carolina Central University in North Carolina. And we're speaking to the theme today, a view on law, justice, and legal rights within the African black community. We're going to take a station break. When we come back, we will open up our lines where you can have a discussion with this civil rights icon, this great professional legal law man, to continue the discussion. So we're going to take a break right now, and you are listening to Missing Pages of History, MPH Radio. That's right. Learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all. But that must be extended to loving your community, loving your people, and loving humanity. We welcome you back to MPH as the voice of MPH, Business Page of History Radio. We are having a dialogue, a discussion, a point of view on law, justice, and legal rights within the African Black community with Professor of Law, Brother Irving Joyner. We'd like to welcome everyone back. And at this point in time, what we're going to do is we're going to open up the line for any questions and views on this particular subject matter with Professor Joyner. And we'll start right now. We'll bring in Brother Alex. We'll bring in. We'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. Any comments, thoughts that you will have on the subject area with Professor Joyner? Brother Alex, the mic is yours.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lee, and I appreciate the conversation today because Mr. Joyner is someone that I've been wanting to talk to for a long time and get to know because we both share that passion for what's right and what's wrong. And when I look at what's going on in my neighborhood, and in other neighborhoods, and what's happening around the world, well before George Floyd's death, that the Americans have always looked down, and I mean the European Americans, have seemingly always have looked down upon any other race. And yes, it was evident that that's the way this country was started, as by someone feeling more superior than the other. And due to armaments and ships and wealth, they were able to take over lands and properties and colonialize. And then they began to make their own law, their own constitution. And they came up with their idea of what was fair for them and just for someone else. So as we move forward now, and I look at what sits up in Congress, the For the People's Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and as they sit there while the bills are being passed and while state legislators are passing laws like Texas in the dead of night at 2:30 in the morning, denying the people of color certain access to voting. And then the question of the 3/5 clause being brought back forward. I am so determined now to know that we have to, as Mr. Joyner said. We can't step aside and let what's going on continue to go on. That we have to make it to the ballot box, regardless of where they move to. If they move them 6 blocks away, we got to go 6 blocks away to get there. If they move them to another city in our county, we got to get to that ballot box. We have to show up where we can show up because our voices need to be heard. Otherwise, rights and liberties will be taken away. And the marching that we're doing now, the talking that we're doing now, yes, it's a start. And it's, as they say, fear thrown in the right direction. But we need dialogue. And we need dialogue like today. Made simple, made plain, where anyone can follow it. And I've been following his knowledge for a good little bit now on this radio show. And it has truly inspired me. And if he can comment on any of those acts, which is the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, or for the People's Act, because a lot of people don't even know what they mean or know what they encompass. So if he can just give a brief summary of what's sitting up there in Congress, because both of these acts are important, and it's something that we as people need to know about. And if he can just do a brief summary, I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Joyner, for that, and it is certainly a pleasure for me to meet you and to hear the comments that you've made, and then also the great questions from Mr. Robinson that we're sharing today. As a precursor of my response to the point that you were making, I agree that we have to show up, actively show up in those centers of power where we must be active participants in order to ensure that our rights are protected. Politics flows from, and it's an old saying, from the barrel of the gun. It was the barrel of the gun that allowed for this this land to be overwhelmed and taken by European forces way back when to serve as the center point of this what we now know as the United States of America. But we're in a position where we can assert power, exert power. And if we are not actively doing just that, then our rights are going to be overlooked. They are going to be undermined, and our ability to protect and defend ourselves will be eliminated. There are two very important acts. You talked about the John Lewis bill, which is designed to protect the right to vote and to make more permanent the individual protections to overcome efforts in the states to take away the authority of African Americans and people of color to participate in the political campaign or the political franchise that that we have. And we're talking about having to do with gerrymandering. That is the change in the representative structure of every state to decide who it is that will be eligible to be elected to various positions within the governmental structure, dealing with non-discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin, or religion. Dealing with this notion of the identification of people being able to identify themselves in order to vote in the various states. The power, constitutional power to vote, comes from state constitutions rather than from the federal constitution. But it is also in a position that the states can define exactly how that voting is to take place. And the John Lewis bill is designed to structure that in a fair and equitable manner. Then we also have the efforts to improve the criminal justice system, the George Floyd Act, and that is to provide protections against the kinds of police brutality, police murders that our people have been experiencing in this country, and that has been increasing in the last few years, and we all know about those. None of these efforts would even be on the table for discussion but for the response of African Americans all over the country to what is going on, raising the voice of protest about what is happening to our people. And that's the first and important first step that we see that the people in the streets are demanding justice and demanding just laws and demanding the protection of the legal rights that we have. And we have to continue that struggle and push against those people who are in Congress right now who would want to deny those rights to us, and that is why we need to be on the horn every day to get the senators in Washington, D.C., the congressional representatives in Washington, D.C., to pass these bills that will give some additional protections to our people as we attempt to move forward and allow for the opportunity to redress grievances that we have, such as occurred in Minneapolis, Minnesota, with the Derek Chauvin case. And that illustrates my point amply, that here you have an African-American who was elected as the Attorney General of that state. And that person was in a position to take over the investigation of the George Floyd killing and to put his people in place to investigate that crime and to prosecute that crime, which resulted in a conviction of this officer. And in addition to that, now you have a change in the Attorney General's office that has resulted in civil rights violations or claims being filed against not only those that officer, but other officers who were involved in the George Floyd case and officers who were involved in other cases as violation of federal law. And if you don't have the right people in places, then you don't have those kinds of results. And that's why our political participation becomes so important, that we stand up and we show up and we show out to ensure that the rights that have been promised to us in the Constitution, both at the federal level and at the state level, are protected and not abridged by those people who see us as not deserving of those protections.
Any other question, comment, Ms. Alex?
Yes, also, Professor Joyner. When we look at the three-fifths clause, that was the other thing that, you know, also touched my heart, because in the Constitution, you know, some people see it two different ways or sometimes three different ways, as being counted as three-fifths of property or three-fifths of the total number of whites in a community or in a state or whatever. But I want to know the true clarification, as you understand it, through constitutional law, where these states now are getting up and making laws toward that three-fifths clause. So if you can make that a little bit plainer so, you know, some of us can understand that and can sink in, because I've had a lot of questions People have asked me on different podcasts about that. So if you can clarify that a little, I think that would help out.
Yes, that was a part, and Mr. Robinson talked about this or alluded to this earlier on, a part of the original thinking of the what I call the Floundering Fathers, who, as a part of the compromise to create the federal Constitution, gave undue power and authority to southern states by allowing them to count those enslaved people as three-fifths of a person's to increase the political power that they had within the governmental structure. And so by counting enslaved people as three-fifths of a person, they were able to get additional delegates into the constitutional framework that we were dealing with at the time. That three-fifths compromise, as it's called, doesn't apply today because we don't have any enslaved people. We don't have any people who are designated as chattel. So that provision has been arrested within the Constitution itself because the subject matter of that no longer exists. And we are all now free people, and based on the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, the enslavement of people now is illegal on the part of the state or any other organ of government or any other individuals within the state. Now, unfortunately, we had some legislators down in Tennessee who have created this new kind of deformed interpretation of the three-fifths compromise and what its meaning is in our governmental structure today. And for that, we need to have pushback all over the country to that effort to help them understand how backwards, illiterate, and unsupported are the interpretations that they attempt to give to this this three-fifths notion. But in terms of the law, it is no longer an operative term, and if it was, it would be something that would be resident at the federal level rather than at the state level, since the state of Tennessee does not have within its constitution anything dealing with the counting of people as three-fifths of a power block, nor does any other state have that kind of provision in its constitution. If that responds to the point that you were trying to raise.
Okay.
Yes, it did. I appreciate it.
Okay, next we'll go to one of our Miller contributors. We'll bring in Susie. Susie, a question or comment for Professor Joyner.
Sorry for that, had technical difficulty. Mr. Professor Joyner, I'd like to ask, what's your opinion on whether we should receive reparation for being enslaved?
Yes, clearly we as a people, or the descendants of those who were enslaved, who were forced to labor in this country without compensation, are entitled to reparations for the that free labor which was provided for our by our ancestors. They did not voluntarily give of those services, but did it under duress, did it under the whip, did it under the power of the gun to compel them to work in the fields to build up the country into what it is now. And the benefits of that have accrued to people, those who were the oppressors, and the benefits from that have circulated down now to their family members, and they are still enjoying the benefits of all of that, while we have been not only oppressed during the enslavement period, but also during the Jim Crow period, where we were not allowed to maximize our skills and utilize the labor force that we have for our own benefit. So, given that history, clearly we are entitled to reparations. Whether we'll get reparations is another question, but whether we are entitled to that, clearly we are, because there is labor that was provided, there was debt incurred for that labor, and it is unpaid, and the people who are now benefiting from this have no intention of paying for that, and it's a battle in which we are continually engaged and should be engaged to bring to the attention of everyone in this country and around the world that there is a debt owed to African Americans that is going unaddressed by those people who are in power and are privileged as a result of that forced labor that they were able to obtain.
You know, Professor Joyner, I would like to get your critique on this particular phenomenon. Looking at the history of African people in this country, and when we look at the Reconstruction period, we look at the Civil Rights period, and one of the fights or argument was that the more we participate in the political system, the more we have more representation in the political parties. For example, we have more elected males in the political process today than ever before, particularly in the Democratic Party. We have more 300, 400 different elected officials in the political parties today versus before when we basically had none. But yet our current reality shows that we are really a lot worse off economic and politically, collectively, than what we would probably for having all these so-called investments. How do you explain that particular phenomenon?
Well, I guess I have a little pushback on the premise that you provided. I was raised in North Carolina, and I was raised during the Jim Crow era. And I know the restrictions that we had on our movements and our ability to amass wealth and power and to achieve the rights that we now enjoy. And I can say that I have seen a significant increase in all of those areas that we did not enjoy previously. And certainly we have been able to build upon what we had then, but in no way is what we had then exceeding what it is that we have in place today. So with the growth of political participation and our growth and the ability to participate in the economic franchise and our ability to improve our educational setting and to improve our family lives and to provide better housing and medical attention and care for our people, that grew from and resulted in this increase in the number of elected officials that we have around the country today. So as I see it, it is because of what we fought for and won that we have these people in place. But as we have been able to maximize the participation of these people in positions of power, our economic, our political, our social, our business life have all improved as a result of that and not replaced or been subservient to what it was that we used to have back in the day.
Okay, Professor Jordan, this is a perspective you are giving to us. Given that perspective, would you respond to this issue when we look at this progress that many people have viewed that we have made today from a class perspective? One would argue to say yes, as individuals, some of us have profit from this struggle. Yes, one would argue that some of our people have made advancement economically. Some will support, but even given all of this progress that people may have made individually, does it really transcend in terms of collectively as a group of making progress and really moving forward? Did we make an error in the 60 movement instead of operating from a perspective or independently to be an independent group of people, or some say a nation, versus fighting for integrating into a system that may be structurally set up where this independence will never be achieved in this present context? How would you argue to that particular phenomenon?
All right, I certainly agree that there are class distinctions within our community, that there are people who have been able to and have amassed greater wealth and position, economic position within the society than are others. There is still a high class, a high number of individuals within among African Americans who are within the low income, the lower economic recipients of the economic distributions that we are dealing with, and you cannot deny that. There is no denial of that, which, though, places upon us the burden of working to ensure or to elevate those individuals such that they improve the opportunity that they have to participate as fully as others in the economic development of the country. There are many people who have benefited, people of color, I mean, who have benefited from this this struggle, who have no notion that they ought to reach back and help those who are less fortunate than they are. And one of the things that we have to do is to help our people to understand that we don't succeed on an ongoing basis unless we bring those other persons along with us. And that's why we are engaged, for instance, in a fight for 15 to increase the minimum wage that people earn from $7 an hour to $15 an hour. That's an effort to reach back and help those individuals who are still disadvantaged economically and otherwise to improve the financial condition that they are in. So that's an ongoing struggle, but it is one that is resident on us as a people to begin to push for those who are not able to push and fight for themselves, because it wasn't that long ago that each of us was in that same position ourselves. So that is something that some of us have missed out on and have become selfish and self-centered in what it is that we have been able to obtain and not reaching back to help those that are less fortunate than we are. And that is a significant part of our community, but that is something that is a part of the struggle that individually each of us have to engage in so that we bring along the entire group of people rather than identifying a specific segment of people who are going to benefit from the successes that we've had. If that addresses your
question. Okay. No problem. Professor Joanna, before we ask you our last question, we would like to give you the opportunity maybe to share something with our listening audience on any books, any written articles that you may have published that may be of interest so we can better understand that People History Movement. So we'd like to give you a few minutes to talk about any works that you may have produced that our listening audience may not be aware of, and we can use it as a tool to better understand the plight and the history of our people.
Right. Well, I've done a number of publications over the years dealing with the fight to improve our educational system, fights to improve political participation and protect the right to vote. I've done articles dealing with police misconduct and litigating these police killing cases, and I'm actively involved now in litigation speaking to each of those areas. So that is an ongoing struggle in which I am engaged to be a part of this effort to bring about meaningful change on behalf of our people. If our people don't advance, I can't advance, and you can't advance, and none of our children and their offsprings will be able to advance. I see this as a holistic struggle in which we try not only to unite African Americans together in this struggle, that we also create allies and join into coalitions with other people of colors who are similarly disenfranchised within this country, as well as white allies who want to see that there is a better day and a better country that we can become. So that is my ongoing focus. That is one that I have been involved in since I was a teenager growing up in LaGrange, North Carolina, carrying that to New York and all over the country, where I have worked as an organizer in communities to beat back Jim Crow and continue to resist efforts to oppress and repress people of color. And I would certainly encourage everyone to join in that fight, because it is one that impacts each of us every day in so many different ways, as well as it does our family members, because in a minute, either one of us can become the next George Floyd, and it is incumbent upon us to join together to prevent those kinds of things from continuing to occur in this country.
Okay, before we ask you to respond to the last question, we'd like to make a quick announcement for those listening to MPH Radio. After this particular interview and dialogue with Brother Joyner, Professor Joyner, we will be doing a special tribute in honoring Emmanuel D. Joyner. Today would have been his birthday, May the 10th. He was born in 1934 and made the transition on August 22nd, 2018. But we would like to acknowledge, we'll do a little special acknowledgement to Mr. Emmanuel D. Joyner. He is one of the founders of this particular radio show. His birthday will be on the 10th of May. And we also will make sure we don't forget those who have struggled to make our people move forward. So we're going to be doing a little quick little tribute to him coming up shortly. So stay with us, and we'd like to have your views and comments on the life of Mr. Joyner shortly. Now, getting back to our special guest today, Professor Irvin Joyner. In closing, Mr. Joyner, I'd like to get your thoughts on three individuals and their work and how you see this whole question of applying the legal aspects of these laws to get where we need to go. You know, there was a book written by Harold Cruz called The Crisis Among the Negro Intellectual, where you talk about the dilemma that African people have faced since arriving in the shores of the U.S. of America in terms of seeking their true liberation. He said that we have three paths. We can stay here and integrate into the capitalist system in which we are doing now, or trying to do, many of us. Or we can stay here and separate, which we had also that train of thought that many say, if we can stay here, let's create our own nation and be independent of the rest of the society. And then we have another train of thought, the Pan-African thought. Let's leave here, integrate, and go back home to Africa, and be Africa up and make Africa become a power base that will protect and serve the interests of our people. Black Kwame Ture, formerly known as Falcon Carmichael. We're trying to say you have a chance maybe to work with and be involved with around the civil rights movement struggle. You have had a chance to also maybe work with and been around the history of Martin Luther King, who seemed to follow the screen and maybe integrate and make it become a better America, even though during the last part of his career, he sort of raised the issue maybe we were talking about integrating in the house as Bernie. Again, you have the three and the thoughts of people like the Minister Lua, Prayer of Khan, Republic of New Africa, who talk about separating and making their own home. Among those three thoughts, I would just like to get your response to that. Based upon your practice of understanding our people's history and movement, and which way forward?
Okay, I'm very familiar with Hal Cruz and his thinking, as evidenced in his writing, and I think he was very profound in his thought and the presentation of the options that are available to us at this point. And I see them as options that individuals, through their study, through their connections, through their contacts, through their ideological perspectives, will have to choose and can make those the determinations for themselves. I'm very familiar with the Republic of New Africa, the Nation of Islam. I've worked with all of those groups and organizations, and with respect to the Republic of New Africa, its leadership, really Chokwe Lumumba, ended up becoming the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, before he passed, and now his son is the mayor of that town, and I think that that kind of evidence Chokwe's determination that he was basically going to cast down his bucket where he was and try to build a better and more powerful and lasting society on the territory in which he resided at that particular point. And for many people, that's what we choose to do. But I think that these are all options that people need to look at, and there are other countervailing issues that people have to consider as they look at all of those things. I mean, if we're talking about, for instance, migrating back to Africa, there are Africans who are there in those positions of power and trying to make that country and land what it is, and would not necessarily support a so-called return of African Americans to those communities with the idea of trying to take over or even to help develop those. But there are efforts where, and I've been there, and I've seen African Americans who have been working in many of those countries to help growth and development there, and they are very pleased with the work that they've been able to do. I end, though, with this notion of while those options that that you have mentioned exist, that it is the responsibility of each of us to examine those and find out what is the best way for us to move forward with the gifts and talents that we have to try to help our people advance. We can't do them all, but we can do those that within our heart, within our soul, within the ideological perspectives that we have can best serve to elevate our people, whether they are in this state, in this country, or in some other country. And but that's a decision that we all have to grapple with. And so I encourage and support any of those decisions that people make.
Okay, and Professor Irving Johnson, for those who would like to get in touch with you, maybe invite you to their communities, how can they do that?
I can be contacted by email at ijoyner, that's ijoyner, at nccu.edu. That's iJoiner at nccu.edu or by telephone at 919-530-6293. And that's the best way to get me will be by email rather than by telephone, because we are still doing a lot of stuff remotely at this point. And I would be more than happy to respond to people's questions, issues, and concerns that they want to present to me.
And your final thoughts are something on the theme tonight, a view of law, justice, and legal rights within the African/black community. Your final thoughts.
If you don't use it, you lose it. If you're not engaged in this process where we're trying to develop just laws, where we are trying to achieve equal justice and the protection of legal rights, then we will lose on all accounts. But we have to be faithful stewards to the pursuit of sufficient power as it exists within this society to protect our people and allow our people to develop and grow within the framework that we choose to venture.
And on that note, Professor Joyner, we'd like to thank you for making your contribution on filling in one of our many missing pages of history. Good luck in your future endeavors. And if you have anything you think our people need to know in the legal field, what's going on, please give us a call. And this stage, this platform, will always be available to you and others who is trying to make a better humanity for all mankind. So, again, we thank you, Professor, for your contribution to today's program.
Okay, and I thank you for this opportunity to share these minutes with you, and look forward to doing so again.
Thank you. All right, listen, audience, you've been listening to Professor Irvin Joyner. He's a law professor at the North Carolina Central University. He also icon as a result of doing the civil rights struggle. We'd like to thank him for giving his views, his perspective on law, justice, and legal rights within the African-American, within the African/black community. What we're going to do right now, we're going to pause for a station break with music with the message. And when we come back, we will have a special tribute. We want to acknowledge a founder of this station, this organization, Mr. Emmanuel D. Joyner. Today, coming up on May the 10th, will be his birthday. He was born May the 10th, 1934, and made the transition on August 22nd, 2018. We'd like to just acknowledge his upcoming birthday and want to remind people of the kind of legacy and contributions that Mr. Joyner, Emmanuel D. Joyner, has made to our people. And, you know, when you work for your people, you never die. You live forever. So we'd like to give a little small tribute and acknowledging his birthday coming up when we come back. Again, you'll listen to MPH Radio, Missing Pages of History.
Oh, baby, love. loving you weather, and the good, the bad, the happy, the sad. Ooh, yeah.
I'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. Right now, we'll make our transition. We'd like to do a special acknowledgement and tribute to one of our co-founders and members of MPH Radio and Mr. Page of History, and that's Mr. Emmanuel D. Joyner. Emmanuel D. Joyner was born May 10th, 1934. He made a transition on August 22nd, 2018. But what we'd like to do is just do a shout-out on his upcoming birthday. And to do that, we first have a message from the community from Brother Alex Joyner. Brother Alex, we will give you the mic now. The mic is yours.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lee, again. And I appreciated the information today that I received from Professor Joyner, because it was valuable, and we need to heed his words. So as we go forth in our daily lives, let some of that knowledge you received today soak in. And remember that to keep our rights, that we have to be determined and steadfast and passionate, that we go to that ballot box and choose the candidate, regardless of the party, who is in your best interest and the interest of those like you. So on that note, I'd also like to say that I appreciate you taking time today to give me an opportunity, because this has been a hard week, and it's going to be another hard week moving forward past the 10th, because my brother's birthday was only 30 days behind mine, being on the 20th. And I was born near Easter, and he's born near Mother's Day. So those two holidays were big days in our family. And I would like to just say a few things, because it's like I called you the other night and I told you it's just hard. So bear with me. Happy birthday, Brother Emmanuel Dan Joyner. As the years roll by, I still feel you close to my heart. Today, though, will always be your day, the day you were born to make the world a little bit better. You see, we were all born for a purpose yet to be determined. Some births are not planned or happy. Some births are joyous and eagerly awaited. Your birth came to a young couple who already had three sons, and now you, a fourth son, was born. You are given the name Emmanuel from the Bible, as our mother loved that precious book. Taken from the Hebrew text, Emmanuel means God is with you. As a child, you were special and different than the rest, as you chose to seek your own path in life. Everything you did seemed divine to some, confusing to others. And, oh my God, and amazing to many others. You taught me that we must all seek the purpose of our existence, to love and cherish each day we have, to start out early in the morning and with a smile and a hello world, are you ready for me today? We all wonder what was behind Dan's smile. When he entered or left the room, it was the last thing you often remember. From a serious explanation of information that you might not understand to a simple joke that made you laugh for minutes, Dan's wit and smile made you feel good and comfortable around him. Even though my brother had many friends, he embraced anyone who was open to facts and self-improvement information. I would like to share a moment of a special trip home that we shared together. I lived with my sister, Maxine, in Pennsylvania for a few years and loved to travel by train to Baltimore. I bought a bus ticket to go home to be with my mom on Mother's Day. Somehow I misplaced my ticket the week before at Dan's house in Baltimore and couldn't find it anywhere. I knew it'd be 2 weeks before I got paid again, so I was deeply depressed. Dan helped me look for it, but we didn't find it. I went back to Pennsylvania on the train brokenhearted. I was afraid to tell Maxine, even though if she knew I was going home, she would bought me another ticket. But I really wanted to surprise my mother. Mother wrote me every month, and we shared a special bond in writing ever since I was a young child. I had written a story especially for Mom and couldn't wait to read it to her. Dan called me on Thursday night to let me know he was going home Saturday morning if I could make it to Baltimore. I started packing before I got off the phone with him. Friday night after work, I rode the train to Dan's house. We left early Saturday morning. I hadn't finished my story for Mom, and Dan asked me what I was writing. I hadn't finished my story. Oh, my God. I told him that Mom enjoyed my stories, and I was writing this one for her. I read several of them to him, and he didn't say anything for at least 10 minutes. Then he said, "Wow, where did you get those thoughts from?" I said I had no idea. They follow me all day long. Sometimes I write them in the diary, and sometimes I record them. Then one of my proudest moments of my life occurred. My brother Dan asked, "When will you write a book? Your stories are good, and people would want to hear what you wrote." Dan complimented me for an hour, thing. He said I had a heartfelt talent to tell a story that could bring happiness or tears to anyone. I idolized my brother, and I thought if anyone would write a book, it would be him. We stopped and got something to eat. Dan took my writing pad and corrected all my mistakes and said, "Now read Mother's story." I looked at all the mistakes I'd made, and I felt terrible. But once I started reading it, I couldn't stop. It was magnificent. Sunday morning after breakfast, I read my story to Mom, Dad, and Dan. All three were speechless. Mom was overjoyed. She said my card and story were the best gifts I'd ever read. Your gift is from God, and one day a lot of people will enjoy your reading and writing. Dan and I rode back to Baltimore, and for some reason we never talked about my writings again until years later when he moved to Raleigh. One day, I pulled out my writing pad, and he said, "What you writing?" I said, "A story for one of the classes I'm substituting." I said the kids were having a problem understanding the information, and I wanted to make it easier for them. Dan looked it over, corrected my mistakes, and said, "Now read it." As I read it, his eyes and face lit up, and he said, "Wow," again, just like he did years ago. On our way home for Mother's Day, "Dan, you made some days the very best of me. Never will we forget your birthday. Brother, you were an exceptional gift. Because my story was called A Mother's Job Is Never Done. So happy Mother's Day. I can never do the work of a mother. The discipline and patience it takes to manage a child through 18 plus years is a lifetime commitment. Every child is different, and like a doctor, mother must care with an unabridged heart of love for special needs. A mother must envision meals for dinner when money is tight. She must account for bills not made yet for the maintenance problems the home may have. A mother hates to close a door or a lowered head when she talks to her child. To find a cure for a sick child, a mother must not sleep when they run a fever or have a hackling cough. Honey and lemon mixed in a hot tea or pills with cold water will soon be down their throats. A mother finds a way when no way seems possible. It is because God placed her here besides man to take care of him. A mother bears the reason and responsibility of bringing life forward. She will suckle her newborn child close to forming a bond for life. A mother will prepare a warm bath to gently wash her child. A mother will sing a hum of soft, sweet lullaby over and over until her child falls asleep. A mother's face glows with pride when she shows off her child after she's dressed him up. There are constant checks with the doctor to make sure her child is growing healthy. While a child is in daycare or school, a mother worries all day until her child is safely back at home. When her child moves out of the home, she worries even more. She feels she can't protect them from the dangers of the world. Yes, a mother's job is never done. At the end of the day, a mother may pray her heart out in these days and times of uncertainty. A mother tries her best to make sure her child is warm, safe, fed, clothed, and comfortable in a home with or without a father. A mother does what she has to do and waits on no one to do it for her. We, as people, have survived because of a mother's nurturing and compassion. Without a caring mother, we would not exist. A mother loves unconditionally. We are blessed to have been given such a divine gift from God's heart. Show your appreciation on Mother's Day for your mother, and remember, she devoted her life to raising you. Make her proud of the child she brought forth into the world. Thank you, mothers, for the thankless job you do. God made you much more special than that. And I thank you, Dan, for looking over my story.
Thank you, Alex. Next, we'll go to caller. Your last four numbers are 4809. As you pay your respect to the upcoming birthday of our brother, Mr. Emmanuel D. Joyner. Caller 4809. The mic is yours. You may speak, caller. Last four numbers, 4809. Okay, I thought the caller had something to say in tribute to Mr. Joyner, so we'll go to our next caller. Yes, caller. 4809?
No, this is Carver. This is Carver Joyner.
Yes, Carver.
This is Emmanuel's. All right, this is Carver Joyner. This is Emmanuel's other brother, one of his many brothers, I must say. And at this time, we always remember our mother, but we also have to remember Emmanuel. Without mom, there wouldn't be no Emmanuel, of course. And Mother's Day is around the corner. Mother is in our hearts, and she'll always be there. Today, we're honoring Emmanuel, and I just want to say that whenever I think of my brother Emmanuel, it brings a smile to my face. Because Emmanuel was just a few years older than I, and I looked up to him as all my older brothers and attempt to emulate them as scholars and their athletic ability is spiritually, so that I can become a wonderful young man as just as they did. My brother Emmanuel was a brother who would give 100% in everything that he did. Emmanuel would read every book, every text, every article, newspaper, anything that he would get into his hand that had the written word. And he would share this knowledge on many topics that would amaze you or anyone that he met. When we were small kids, our mom would ask us to learn something each day by reading any article of our choice in the encyclopedia. She in turn would test our knowledge of what we read. Emmanuel was the one who would always be the first one to jump, and he just wanted to tell everything. Generally, myself or Armstead maybe second, but we found that mom would listen and she would verify what we have read. Emmanuel was the one who continued to carry this foundation throughout his life. I just want to say I love you, brother, and I wish you a very happy and heavenly birthday. But you are still with me in spirit. You will always be here with me in spirit. The flesh may be gone, but your life in spirit lives on. Thank you, Brother Manuel. Rest in peace.
Thank you, Brother Carter. And next we'll go to Susie. Susie, the mic is yours.
Yes, I'd like to just speak about getting in on Mr. Joyner. I'm struggling with what to do. I could go and open and go and remember moments through Mr. Joyner. And man, you gave me moments I can think of that would lift my spirits every time. The moments when he picked me up when there was questions I had. For me to only pick one moment to cherish, save, and keep is proving really difficult as I've gathered a heap from him. I relish the moments and times I got to know Mr. Joyner. May he rest in heavenly peace.
Thank you, Susie. And to our listening audience, we would just like to say, our brother Emmanuel D. Joyner was a very special person in terms of his willingness to share and give all that he had and do it in a way where he wanted everything to be perfect. He didn't want one error, one mistake. And he did it with a sense of discipline, a sense of pride, a sense of love. And like we said earlier, in African culture, an individual never dies. He continued to live with the people, among the people, and for the people. His thoughts and ideals will always be with us, and we will try to do our best to continue this legacy by carrying on and trying to build missing pages of history. I will pause for a second. I believe we have another call online. We may want to give their respects and their memories for Emmanuel D. Joyner and his birthday, May the 10th. I believe, caller, we can call off your last four numbers, caller 9981. Caller, your last four numbers, 9981. The mic is now open to you, your statement.
I believe, caller, we can call off your last
Yes, we can.
Okay.
We have some technical difficulties.
This is Renee.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, caller, can you hear? Go ahead.
Yes.
We have some technical difficulties on our control, but do the best we can.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead, caller.
All right, this is caller Renee Joyner, okay? I am the third brother. You have Alec, you've listened to Carver, and we all know Dan. So I'm Renee. I'm the oldest of the last group of three boys. Number 10 was my number. I just want to say to everyone out there that's listening, Dan is a very relevant person, and he showed that relevance throughout his life. Touching people and committing them and making them engage in something and which was truly worthful. I'm very proud of Alec for stepping into his place today and bringing our name once again to the top, because that's what Dan was. Dan was always on the top. He was a brother that had dreams that became reality. One of his dreams was to go to college. He did that. It was like no goal or no stone was overturned that he could not place back and make sure that things were correct. Even with me, he touched my life numerous times without even realizing it. Education has always been a challenge for young kids. And by him stepping up to the plate and offering services to neighborhood kids, such as giving them books, book bags, pads, writing paper, pens, that was his way of expressing himself
to say, go out, learn, get an education, do better. His thing was always, do better than me. If you have a goal, go after the bigger goal. It's okay to say, I want to work, but it's better to say, I wish to own, or to lead, or to be involved, or to make sure that that act took place. He was very courageous as well. As most people probably don't know this, that he received a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star. That showed that he was willing to sacrifice his life to make sure that his best man made it, his comrades in arms. That is a deed in which very few people can even imagine doing in Vietnam. And that's what stood out for me the most, was that he made it home. He never talked about it, but he made it home. But what he did do, he touched one of my soldiers' lives without even realizing that she would come back to me. So God also has a mysterious way of letting you know the success of your family. In this process, he educated a young lady. Her name was Meriwether, over in California. And basically, he was her English teacher in college. And once she met me as being one of my soldiers under my command, she said, wait a minute, you spell your name J-O-Y-N-E-R, and you look just like this teacher I had in at the university. And I said, I do. She said, oh, yes. I said, well, what was his name? And she said, well, if I'm not mistaken, his nickname that he liked most was Danny. But we had to call him Mr. Joyner all the time. If we made one mistake on a piece of paper, he made sure that we corrected that. He also took time out to make sure that every student had an equal opportunity to learn. He stressed upon the point that he was not perfect, but they would be when he finished, because that was his goal, as you heard from my brother Alex speak, making corrections on your paper. I brought a document to him for him to read as well after my service time, though. It was a very important paper for me. It was over 60 pages. He read all of them. He made the corrections just like Alec did, just like he did by Alec. And once he made the corrections, he said, now read it. I am amazed that we both were touched by the same etiquette of our brother. We don't want to be perfect. We just want to get the job done. But part of getting the job done is having an understanding for each other. And he was a fighter. And he instilled that, and he actually instilled that fight upon us to continue with the endeavors to maintain what we have to get better. And that is what Alec is doing today. He's stepping up to the plate. As we all know, the Joiners never lost a baseball game, as far as I know. And we don't plan on losing one. So, Alec, I want to say thank you for what you're doing and to the rest of my brothers and sisters that are there. And I hope that we can encourage you to continue with this fight. Because one thing we believe in more than anything else is justice, rightfulness, and the Spirit of God. And today, Dan, I salute you once again for being the best brother I've had, along with the other seven, okay? But you always will stand out. You were a leader. You're a forerunner. So rest in peace, my brother, today. I salute you.
Thank you, caller. Next, we'll go to our next caller. Your last four numbers are 9348. 9348. The mic is yours. You may speak. Okay, I thought we had a caller. Want to say something? 9348. The mic is yours. 9348. Call once. 9348. Calling twice.
Hello, is that me? Is that me?
Yes, Carla. The mic is yours, yes.
Oh, thank you. Okay. My name is Mary. Hello, can you hear me?
We can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can, Carla. You may talk. Mary.
I would like to read my brother's obituary. Okay, can I start now, sir?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, you may.
I am the youngest sister of Danny. Emmanuel Daniel Joyner. Was born on May 10, 1945, to the late John Walker and Jesse Palmer Joyner in Henderson, North Carolina. He departed this life on Wednesday, August 22, 2018, with his daughter Tanya and sister Bessie, who was his caretaker, by his side. Emmanuel grew up with 11 amazing siblings, Jesse of New York, John and Audrey of Pennsylvania, Harvard Louise of North Carolina, Renee of Germany, Alexander Louise of North Carolina, Prepor of Virginia, Jesse, Jim affectionately known as Aunt Sis of North Carolina, Maxine and Eva, and Albert born of Pennsylvania, Mary Jeffrey of Virginia, and Armstead, and Saleya, his wife, of Virginia.
To say to our listening audience, we apologize for the technical audio problems. We are in canon with the program. Those are issues beyond our control, and we're doing the best we can. But on that note, we'd like to close out with the program by again recognizing only Mr. Emmanuel D. Joyner, which would be in his 87th birthday on May the 10th. And we will continue to live up to his promises, his ideals, and his aspirations. When we speak about justice, one of the things we made a commitment, if he was still living today, that at the end of this year, we'd like to ask his family members, friends, all supporters who recognize the attributes of Mr. Joyner to come and join us in his name. We'll be taking a special trip, an educational Black History Culture trip, to Cuba. That's right, we said Cuba. That was something that we had planned on doing if you were living. And since he made a transition, we made a commitment that we will not give up that particular idea because we felt like it's important to learn from each other, connect our communities, underserved communities. And if you're a friend and supporter, family members of Mr. Joyner, MPH Radio and Mr. Page History coming to you and asking you for your help and support to organize an African delegation to attend Cuba this year during the last week of December to the first week of January 2022. So in memory of Mr. Joyner, we'll continue the legacy. We'd like to thank our Professor Irving Joyner for his presentation and perspective on a view on law, justice, and legal rights in the African Black community. And we'd like to thank all of you who allowed this program to come to your home this evening. And we'd like to remind you that this is a bi-weekly program. Our next program will be on the 29th of May at 1 p.m. Please tune in. If you're interested in going on our tour, going on our trip, and supporting us, you can email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. mphradio@yahoo.com. So until next time, we will continue to strive to go forward and fill in our missing pages. And we would like to leave you in memory of Mr. Joyner with these music of conscience and his ears, Choices of Colors, and We Are Here. We see you on the 29th of May 2021. We thank you again for listening to Missing Pages of History Radio.
Save the nation with no support for education. 'Cause Right now it don't make